This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by an anonymous sponsor and by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Lori. It's certainly good to see you here. Right behind that old microphone with your finger on the button just in case I get unhinged.
That's right.
Now, I have to say, folks, you remember last week, Mark got me going because he said, we may be unhinged here, and we kind of were. So Lori and I were just talking about that, and I have to laugh about that. But you know what? There's a lot to be unhinged about, okay? And
yes,
so
there is.
There's a certain amount of, you know, rationale about being unhinged, and maybe we should just call it being passionate about all of these issues rather than unhinged. Although there's an element of that, there's true. Because I do get aggravated with some of this stuff, and it does come out. And of course, I always have a bad word or two, which Lori gets very nervous about.
I have my finger on the button.
And she's got that finger on the button.
Well, it's like they say, if you're not mad, you're not paying attention.
Well, there you are. Okay. Well, all right. Let me try to control myself today and see if I can't do a little bit better job of it. But before I get into what I want to talk about today, I want to just go back and correct something that I said last week. Not a major correction, but it's one of these things where I just feel obligated to go back and correct one thing I said. Last week, after I was getting into all this stuff about Ukraine, the background and blah, 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 I did mention the Baltic states, okay? And I said that Latvia had 37% of its population were ethnically Russian. And I need to correct that because it's only 25%. It's still sizable, okay? A quarter of the population. But the whole issue is, because there are so many Russian, ethnic Russians in the Donetsk region of Ukraine, that's what is driving so much of what's happening here. Okay, Putin feels it's his responsibility, and of course he has grandiose visions. Like I said last week, he wants to recreate the Soviet Empire. Okay, fine. But it's made easier for him when he's got all of these ethnic Russians who want to join Russia. Okay? So that's a complication, not only for Ukraine, okay, but it's a complication, a bigger complication for NATO. Because if Putin decides that these 25% of these ethnic Russians in Latvia need his protection, well, guess what? Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia are all in NATO. I mean, this is a problem. And as I suggested last week, There needs to be some sort of a way to satisfy, you know, these ethnic desires to be, you know, working within a system that deals with their own ethnic, you know, group. And I suggested that, well, go back to World War I, the end of World War I, Woodrow Wilson, and the principle of self-determination of nations. Now, you know, on the one hand, with the war going on in Ukraine, I would argue it kind of makes sense to think about a peace agreement along those lines. You say, well, then you're just giving in to Putin and all the bad things he's done. I understand that, okay? And I'm not suggesting that war crimes haven't been committed, that we should, in fact, prosecute him as best we can for bombing civilians. That's outrageous. But what I am suggesting to you here is that at some point, it seems to me that we have got to come to grips with the self-determination of people's principle. I don't think that can apply to places like, you know, Latvia with 25% of the population. I do think that, you know, there has to be an accommodation within, you know, those countries that have that kind of a sizable but not even close to a majority. So how they figure all this out is something that the smart people who are getting all the big bucks better start thinking about something, okay? But I do think that with, you know, Estonia with, I think, 24% and Lithuania with only 6%, that these kinds of things can be worked out. but they need to be thought about. And that's why I basically said last week, we have got to have deterrence, strong deterrence in the Baltic states and in Poland. Because, I mean, it's a trigger. NATO means attack on one is attack on all. And, you know, that stood us well during the Cold War. And it worked. It can work again. But it's not going to work again unless there's a sizable deterrent that makes Putin think twice about what he's doing. So, like I said, my purpose here is not to get back into the Ukraine business like I did last week, which it took the whole hour to do, but basically to, you know, to correct that one technical mistake that I did make. Okay, so having said that and corrected that, what do I want to talk about today? Okay, we've got several things that I think are important. I've mentioned before the weaponization and politicization of the DOJ and the FBI. I want to go back over that. The issue of what's going on with crime as a political issue and what happened with good old Mayor Lightfoot giving the boot. Adios, Lori Lightfoot. But let's talk about why that happened, okay? And the implications of other big city mayors who may just find, you know, the door being closed behind them, okay? The question about the coronavirus is back in the news. And why is that? Because the FBI and the Energy Department and the Energy Department lab is first class. The FBI has now come along and said they think it was an accidental release out of Wuhan. Well, I mean, now they are right-wingers now? Is that, I mean, what they did to Tom Cotton, Senator Cotton, in 2020, early January, February, I mean, they just took him down the road of, oh, he's a conspirator, he's, you know, this is Looney Tunes, it's right-wing nuts, it's racist. You know the drill. Let's talk a little bit about that. Here's another thing that's going on, okay? Over the weekend, you had Trump talking at CPAC. And so, of course, he won an overwhelming vote, 63% of the straw vote. DeSantis got in the 20s. But nevertheless, the DeSantis-Trump issue is quite real. And I think that when you look at DeSantis' schedule, although he has not said he's running, he seems to be running. Why go to all these places he's been? Why go to, you know, Birmingham Thursday night? Why go to Iowa the next day? Why go to New Hampshire? He ain't running, but he's running, okay? And I think that's a healthy thing to have happen. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that at the right time. Let's also say something about this whole business with East Palestine and this rail derailment, the absolute disaster that happened to that small city, and look at the absolute lack of care on the part of this administration. Buttigieg doesn't show up for 3 weeks, and not that it matters because he is a zero. But there are aspects of this that we ought to just dig into a little bit better, okay? Or a little bit more. All right, so guess what? Tomorrow, the Alabama State Legislature goes back into session. Oh, my God, hold on to your wallet book and all the rest of this. I mean, the old medical idea of do no harm, it applies to the state legislature. So let's talk a little about what we think needs to be done in a couple of areas there. I do want to also mention that last week, or 2 weekends ago now, the GOP met, the Alabama GOP met in Birmingham, and they basically had some resolutions, one of which I think is important, and one of which, from people who were there who should know better, have interpreted it in a way that does not do justice to the people who put this resolution together, and I'll get to that in a minute. And then I'll close out with the fact that Common Sense Campaign is putting on its Welcome Back Rally. This is the 12th annual Welcome Back Rally. The first one was in 2009. And basically what we do is we have a series of speakers who are going to talk about issues excuse me, that are important to Alabama from the perspective of the right-wing lunatics like us. I get that. But you know what? There are issues that transcend the political divide. And I want to talk about some of those and some of the speakers who are going to be speaking about those things on Thursday at our Welcome Back Rally. All right. So, Lori, that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Do you have anything you want to talk about? Don't answer that.
I want to listen to what you have to say.
Feel free to jump in if I miss something, okay? All right. So let's talk about this, the weaponization and the politicization of the DOJ. I've talked to you all about this before, okay? We know what they have done. In fact, the last time I mentioned this, this was right after all of this business with the Twitter emails coming out, okay? And we saw how the FBI was paying the Twitter people to keep certain things off of Twitter's account. Okay? And then we saw that didn't stop just during the campaign. It continued. So I basically made the point. Elon Musk has done a wonderful thing to open up and shed light on all of the trash that was going on with the absolute politicization of the FBI. All right? So, last week, Merrick Garland, the Department of Justice honcho, he shows up, and look at the grilling he got from the Republican senators, particularly Ted Cruz. Cruz kept asking him, how many people have you investigated over what happened with the bombings of churches, Catholic churches, and the attacks on pro-life centers? Zero answer. Couldn't answer it. Okay? But here again, put this into the perspective of what did DOJ do in terms of going after parents who dared question these stupid school board members? They became targets because they were called terrorists by the school association that was trying to defend all the school boards. They sent a letter to Biden. Biden acted on it very quickly. And the next thing you know, the FBI has declared that parents doing stuff like this, they're terrorists. That's what they were using to stop any kind of expression in opposition to what these school boards are doing. It's outrageous. Okay? Then you have this other issue where parents who are just peacefully protesting as pro-life people at Planned Parenthood's facilities, one of whom in Pennsylvania gets into an altercation with a pro-Planned Parenthood person. The altercation stems from this pro-lifer having his 12-year-old son there, and somebody's hassling the kid. The father steps in and says, stop. Takes action on his own. Next thing you know, there's an altercation. And the parent gets charged. Well, guess what? In the local courts, there was nothing done to the parent. He was defending his kid. But oh no, Merrick Garland and the FBI found out about this, and they sent a SWAT team to pick him up. This is exactly what they did to Trump's people showing up at 6 o'clock in the morning and all the rest of that stuff. So when we talk about weaponization,
Here's a father of seven kids. They show up in force. The mother's going crazy. And I mean, this is the point that Cruz was making. We have a double standard, okay? The politically approved people are not touched. If you're on the other side of the issue, stand by. You're going to be frog marched out of your home and harassed. It's got to end. And I think that one of the things that we as grassroots people can do is to make sure that we're calling our elected representatives in D.C. to support what people like Cruz were doing and making sure that this FBI is reined in and that the DOJ becomes a Department of Justice, not a political tool of the Democratic Party. Now, I know that that's probably, you know, starry-eyed and, you know, very naive. But you know what? If no one says anything, then they're just going to figure, hey, it's okay, nobody minds. The hell with that. I mean, it really does demand that our elected representatives do exactly like Ted Cruz did the other day and challenge these people and shame them publicly so that they're not getting away with this and that the corrective measures are going to be made to fix this. And this is a systemic problem in the FBI. We've seen it from the whistleblowers. Jim Jordan was talking about it over the weekend. They have whistleblowers who have documented all sorts of problems within the FBI. Christopher Wray was brought in to fix the problems with that Comey, you know, had created. Nothing happened. The only thing that Christopher Wray seems to be waking up to is the fact that maybe the coronavirus actually was, you know, coming out of the Wuhan lab, but I'll talk about that in a minute. But where is the systemic, you know, reforms to deal with the politicization that has been the hallmark of the FBI for the last 6 years, 7 years? So I think we need to make sure that we're on top of this and that we push our, particularly the senators, to push them hard to do what's necessary to ensure that the FBI and the DOJ are under control. You know, whatever that means, but it can't continue the way it is. And that's the bottom line. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the issue of crime and its impact on the Lightfoot election. So, we've talked about this before too, all right? There's nothing new about the spike in crime that really started excuse me, after the George Floyd business in June of 2020. The Summer of Rage we all know about. But the connection between the Summer of Rage and the subsequent rise in crime is directly related to mayors, Democrat mayors, okay, by the way, that did nothing to stop what was happening in their cities. And so Portland sees that federal buildings are under attack. You may remember seeing all that stuff. Interesting side note that came out of the Garland, you know, investigation last week was that of all those people that you remember seeing throwing Molotov cocktails, doing all sorts of damage to that federal building in Portland, only six people have been charged. I mean, there were hundreds of these people out there. Six people charged. Meanwhile,
look at what they're still doing to the people from January 6th. I mean, you talk about a double standard here. All right? But that's taking me on a different light. I don't want to get on a sidetrack on that. My point is, crime has spiked. And it's spiked for a reason. People are letting the bad guys get away with it. You say, well, come on, show me how that's the case. Really? How about all these Soros prosecutors, from Gascon in Los Angeles to the idiot in San Francisco to the guy in New York that even Mayor Adams is complaining about? That one that's in St. Louis who said nothing about the protesters that came to the lawyer's house, and he brings out his AK-47 or whatever the hell it was. He and his wife are standing out there pointing their weapons at them. You come on, you're going to get shot. They've already taken down the gate to the house. But oh no, this prosecutor in St. Louis, she doesn't care about the mob threatening the lives of those two individuals. Oh no. She goes after the two individuals. Fortunately, they were pardoned by the governor. This is a BS factor beyond belief, though. Oop, going to the thumb there. She's got a handle on that daggum button. Okay.
Just checking.
Just checking. Make sure it works. Okay, I gotcha. All right, so here you have prosecutors not prosecuting crime. And especially in Chicago, not only do you have Mayor Lightfoot contributing to the chaos by making sure that her policemen cannot run down suspects, they can't chase them. And I know that you're thinking to yourself, how could anybody do that? Well, she did it. She did it. And so crime goes off the charts. And again, you don't have to take my word for this. Just watch the news every Monday morning. How many people were shot in Chicago? 50, 60, 70? How many murders? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? Every week, it's the same thing. So, I mean, you can talk about crime statistics all you want, whether whether it's for rape, robbery, you know, what is it, carjacking. Everywhere you look, at every one of these Democrat cities, it's the same problem. So the connection between the mayor, like Lightfoot, who's handcuffing the police, and the prosecutors, who are just having a revolving door. Police pick the guy up. Next day, he's back on the street doing the same damn thing. Oh, well, folks. Oh, well. What do you expect? Now, here's where it gets dicey, okay? And this is where the New York slimes come in, all right? I hate to read it. I do. I hate to give them $6 to read the crap they put in there. But I do it so that I can give you a different view than what the slimes is saying, okay? So the New York Times this Sunday in their opinion page, they've got this whole thing about Lightfoot. And of course the excuse as to why she lost is for gender and racial reasons. It's the old playbook. It's not because she did all the things that I've already pointed out to you that just exploded with crime, exploded the crime all over the place. Oh, no, no, no. She's a black woman, and she's LGBTQ, so wow, she's got two big strikes against her right away. Now, I would argue that those are variables which could possibly affect things, could possibly. But let me ask you this. How the hell did she get elected 4 years ago with a cross-section of the vote, whites and blacks all supporting her? Hmm? Everybody knew she was black. Everybody knew she was a woman, or whatever she was with LGBTQ classification.
figure that one out. It didn't matter 4 years ago. It didn't. Boy, I want to say a bad word. Get your finger on that button. Okay, I'm unhinged right now. It didn't matter. Not one bit 4 years ago. But now, it's the big issue. Woman and gender and race. So, excuse me. So my point here is, what is the overwhelming reason? It's the crime statistics. Blacks in the south part of Chicago are sick and tired of seeing their kids shot in the living room by stray bullets from idiots going around shooting everywhere. Kind of, sort of, don't you think? But oh no, leave it to the slimes to come up with yet another, right out of the playbook. It's race and gender. When those two factors didn't make a hill of beans 4 damn years ago. Sorry for my Monday cough.
You're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review on WABF, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises and an anonymous donor.
Yes, thank you, Lori. Let's see if I can become controlled a little bit. Okay, I hope you all get the point here, folks. All right? 4 years ago, she wins an election. Big time. Race and gender don't make anything. Whites are voting for her. It's wonderful. Kumbaya City. 4 years later, she's out on her butt because she is a failure. Not because she's a she or whatever she is with LGBTQ crap. Who knows? And it's not because of race. It's because she failed to protect the people in her city. Now, where does this go down the road here? I mean, it is a built-in argument for the next president, whoever that person, you know, the nominee is for the Republicans. I mean, one could argue that, and particularly hoping that the pro-law guy Vallas in Chicago wins his election in April, that's when the runoff is. And that's more than possible. Okay, we'll see how that works out. But the point is, if a pro-law and order nominee wins in Chicago, then I think that kind of points us in the right direction, that there's hope for the country, for people to wake up. It'll be interesting to see if Mayor Adams really starts to crack down on crime and goes after the prosecutor. There is some movement towards that. But the overall point about the crime is that this is exactly what is necessary from a law and order perspective. We can't have this chaos and the crime going the way it is. And so whether it's Chicago or even in Mobile, I mean, every night you look at Channel 15 News, and what do you see? A shooting here, a shooting there. It's infecting the inner city. And somewhere along the line, we need to have a discussion about how this is going to end. And maybe we will have that discussion. But for right now, the political aspect of this is that it's toxic for the Democrats because of why? Defund the police. And here again, look at Joe Biden siding with the Republicans in the House and in the Senate against the D.C. City Council. Those folks want to do more along the lines of defunding the police, shifting the money back over to social services, and of course, letting illegals vote. Even the stupid mayor vetoed it, and she had that overridden. But because of how things are, Congress has a right to intervene here. And even dumbass Biden decided that he would side with the Republicans here. Thank goodness. But my point is,
this business of crime as toxic, and it can play to the advantage of someone like Trump and DeSantis, whoever's the Republican nominee. And we'll see how that works out. I mean, I hate to see innocent people who are hurt by these criminals, and then we're using that as a means by which we can get rid of these Democrat prosecutors and all the rest of it. But if that's what it takes, then so be it. We have got to get back on top of this and put the bad guys behind bars, and hopefully things will change for the better in these communities. And let me just give a shout out to Trump on this. The Trump people sent task forces, crime task forces, to various places. Okay? They didn't do as much as they needed to do in Chicago, I would argue. But that wasn't necessarily his fault. There was a consent decree that had been agreed to back in the Obama period, which really controlled how things were being done in Chicago. Taken in conjunction with Lori Lightfoot's demand that the police do not chase down criminals, then you've got the prescription for what you saw in Chicago and what you're going to continue to see unless things change. So, I don't know. I mean, we can only hope for the best on this and be thankful that we live here in a state where people go after the criminals. It may not be perfect. In fact, tonight, let me just, as a side note, I'll advertise this. District Attorney Bob Wilters is going to be at our meeting tonight, and we'll talk more about this with him. You know, but Baldwin County has done quite well in protecting its people from the bad guys, and we need to keep doing that. So let's kind of keep that in mind as we go forward. All right, how about coronavirus? We've talked about this before, and I'm not going to belabor it here, but isn't it interesting that when Tom Cotton, and he was probably the first one that really came out and talked about Wuhan lab being, you know, the point of origin for the coronavirus pandemic. Well, I mean, when he came out with that, they all went crazy. This is right-wing conspiracy. It's racism. I mean, Trump was called a racist for curtailing flights from China into the United States. Are you nuts? I mean, whatever one thinks about the race card being played, it's just beyond the pale to even think about this as a racial issue when the people who have it happen to be from China and they're trying to come to the United States, and we're saying, no, not today, not tomorrow, sorry, but that's racist. It's nuts. But my point here is they made it so toxic to talk about the possibility, a distinct possibility, that Wuhan lab was the cause. Now, take a look at what Jim Jordan said over the weekend, talking to Maria Bartiromo. In late January, Fauci had emails from two prominent virologists who basically said they debunked the idea that this pandemic could have started from a wet market, making the point to Fauci that the Wuhan lab, because it had lots of safety violations, which Pompeo had talked about the year before. The State Department did an analysis, and they talked about Wuhan's safety violations. Nothing new about that. In fact, a few years before, a virus had leaked out of one of those labs and spread. It didn't spread like this one. But nevertheless, the point about safety violations was nothing new. Nothing new. And yet, these two virologists went down the road of Wuhan lab being the most likely place that it came from. A few weeks later, according to Jim Jordan, and this is all based on documentation that they have finally gotten because the Republicans are in power and they've got the information they need. Fauci has a phone call, conference call with those two doctors, and within a few days, their stories are changing. Now, what Jordan basically says is that 3 months later, these two are given several million-dollar grants. Now, okay, is this a leap? You know, can we draw the conclusion that they changed their stories because Fauci essentially bribed them? Well, I'll leave that up to you to make up your own mind about that. But it certainly seems there's a cause and effect here. Cause and effect. So all of a sudden now, Fauci is on the defense because he doesn't want it known that they're doing gain-of-function research. Now, many of you may remember seeing, you know, Fauci in a major discussion with Rand Paul. And Paul was just all over him about this. And what Fauci was doing was redefining what gain-of-function meant. Another BS factor, pretty high factor, you want my view. So we get into the pandemic. And the question of the origin was, again, look at what the media said, you know, right-wing conspiracy, nothing according to MSNBC and CNN and all the rest of it. Nothing made sense other than this was natural. It came from the wet lab, the wet market. That's it. Now, go back in time, and here we are. The lockdown starts, masking requirements, and all the rest of it. What are the political concerns that we had at that time? I can tell you that as far as I was concerned at the particular juncture, all of this pandemic was designed for one thing only, and that was to get Trump out of office. Now, is there collusion between the Dems and Les Chinois? Well, maybe. I mean, just think about this. Hunter Biden and the Biden family are doing business in China. Big buck business. Is it out of the realm of possibility that Hunter Biden's contacts with the Chinese Communist Party could have led to some sort of, well, you know, we could really help, need some, we could really use your help here. I mean, Trump's pretty popular and, you know, something like this, blah, blah, blah. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Regardless of whether or not it was, there was collusion between the Biden campaign and the Communist Party on the pandemic, the fact of the matter was, it was detrimental to Trump, and they all knew that that was it. Especially when we started to hear about, well, the only solution to this is we got to break the curve. The lockdown theory was then put out. And so we did that. The surprising thing is that Trump did as well as he did. And so, of course, that leads us back to, you know, the stolen election, which, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist if you say it. You're damn right I'm a conspiracy theorist. How the hell do you think some of this stuff happened? Was it an accident that Stacey Abrams had her consent decree that changed the election laws in Georgia? Surprise, surprise. And Kemp and Raffensperger did nothing about it. Now, Lori, I will get unhinged. Okay? No, she's getting her finger
Take
ready.
A deep breath.
Take a deep breath. Don't have a heart attack. Okay. Hey, I'm getting old. I better not get too unhinged.
There you go.
All right, so the point is, and it wasn't just Georgia. It was Pennsylvania. It's the whole litany of the whole thing about the conspiracy. But oh, no. You know, you're a right-wing nut for thinking that. Okay, classify me that way. I gladly wear it. I'm honored to say, yes, I'm a right-wing conspiracy nut. Because it's true. So whether it was going to be the pandemic which would destroy Trump, or the side bet they made was that they could still get, you know, steal the election, which they did. So there you are. I guess the argument right now is, and this is common sense, don't you think we really need to know the origin of the pandemic so that we can deal with, quote, future pandemics? Now, here again, we get back into the conspiracy 101 theory that this is all part of the Great Reset. I don't think it's a theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. They've said pretty much what they want to do. Decrease the population. They've already killed 7 million worldwide, you know, a million here. My point here is that finding out the origins of the virus is critical. And if the FBI now is leaning towards the Wuhan lab theory, all to the better. If the Energy Department's lab says that, even better, because they are serious scientists there. So we'll see more about it. More investigation is going to take place and see how that goes. But my point here is that notice how what was called the debunked Wuhan conspiracy theory by Washington Post and New York Slimes, all of a sudden, it's gaining mainstream traction. And this is a BS factor beyond belief. These people were complicit in all of this, but now, you know, they have their journalistic reputations to worry about. So they're going to play ball now, make it all hunky-dory. It all be good, bro. That's all this is. This is BS to the highest degree. But at least we'll know more. And if it is pinned down to the accident, fine. But lurking in the backgrounds, and this is, I guess, conspiracy 202 or 2.2, is that this was no damn accident. It was deliberate. And you say, uh-oh, you're unhinging. Well, maybe and maybe not. Why is it that the Wuhan population was contained so quickly and they were not allowed to leave anywhere, except they did send people from Wuhan everywhere in the world? And maybe it was just one of these accidents that happened, and so they took advantage of it by spreading the pandemic. You could say that. But then you could also say, this is the Chinese Communist Party and their minions working hard to gain control of the world one way or another. I'll bring Deke Cox back and we'll talk more about this. But I do think that you cannot discount the deliberate attempt
to spread this pandemic. So we'll see. Okay, fourth thing that I wanted to talk about today was Trump and DeSantis. One of our sponsors, Kevin Spriggs, has this great sign. Now, Kevin's going up to Birmingham on Thursday. He's going to bring his signs. He has one of these 2x4s up on his property on 64 and 181. It was defaced. But anyway, it's a nice picture of DeSantis. And what it says is, you get Trump without the crazy.
Lori, I've seen that.
Yeah, Lori's seen it. Okay, so you know I'm not just creating things here. Well, what did you think of that, Lori?
I thought it was humorous, and it could be meaningful to some people. It mm-hmm. could be a game changer.
Yeah, well,
I think the two of them should run together as president and vice president, but I don't think either egos will allow that.
Yeah, well, I think at this point, you're right about that. I think that most people would like to see Trump, DeSantis, and I think what DeSantis is doing is smart. He's not only doing, and you know, and he's not announcing that he's running, but the fact of the matter is, this is a good chance for him, and he better take advantage of it. So he's doing what he needs to do. He's been all over the place, and now he's coming to Birmingham. I think on Friday he's going to Iowa, and then he's going to New Hampshire, the place where all of these primaries are early on. So what he's doing is building a base, but he's not buying into attacking Trump. And I think that makes sense.
He's riding on Trump's skirt tails. I mean,
well, to a degree, but
reiterating most everything Trump has said.
Yeah, but I think to a very large degree, he's carved out, you know, the fact that woke dies in Florida. Okay? That's significant. And what he's done in terms of not only economic growth, but no lockdowns, keeping schools open, decrying what Disney's done, that was a master stroke to take away those prerogatives that were given to Disney back in 67, you know, giving them essentially a mini state, and no more because of what Disney has done in terms of its wokeness. So my point here is that while it's coattails to a degree, I think that DeSantis has carved out his own story that is very persuasive, number one. It's not much different because he's strong foreign policy-wise, blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't do it in the same way that Trump does. And, I mean, look, I mean, the fact that Trump was on Twitter and everybody hated it, and I get that. But you loved what he did in office, okay? His policies were fine. Strong border, okay? All the rest of it. I mean, we don't have time right now to go through all that. So all I'm suggesting here that DeSantis is playing a very smart game here, okay? Putting himself in to be, you know, at least very competitive. Although the CPAC people gave Trump 63% of their straw poll vote, okay? DeSantis is in the 20s. Okay, fine. That's all right. The real tell is going to be the people who actually vote in the primaries.
What is CPAC again?
Conservative Political Action Group.
Okay.
Okay. I think that's correct. But CPAC's been around a long time.
Committee.
You know, and they are an important group. So for Trump to get 63%, that says a lot. Okay. And it's not that I'm against Trump. Okay. I'm for what Trump did when he was the president. But I'm also concerned that he is a lightning rod of opposition. He will galvanize the left. And if they are able to cheat again, then we're going to have a repeat of 2020.
I can't imagine the left would prefer DeSantis over Trump. They're very, very much alike.
Well, they are very much alike, okay? But you see, the galvanizing is because of Trump's approach. His Twitter, this, that, the other, all the name calling, all that stuff like that, okay? And that drives not only the left crazy, but the GOP establishment doesn't like it either. That's why you have the Never Trumpers. And I think that to a very large degree, that's something that I don't know if Trump has learned a lesson about that or not. It just may be in his DNA. He comes out of New York. He had to fight those people, you know, the unions, to get everything he wanted, okay? So he's a fighter. But we need a fighter, okay? But DeSantis is a fighter in a different way, and he does it smartly, and he doesn't alienate people with all the kinds of hoorah that you saw with Trump. So it's like Kevin Sein says, you get Trump without the crazy, and there's a certain amount of truth to that. So I think it's interesting to see what's going on with all that, and I think that, you know, we're obviously going to see a whole lot more, and we'll get that. So I wanted to talk about Palestine, you know, East Palestine, but what I want to do in the last few minutes is talk a little bit about the upcoming legislative session. As I said earlier, you know, do no harm. Well, we'll see if they're going to do no harm. One of the key acts that's coming up that we really hope is passed is the Health Freedom Act proposed by Health Freedom Alabama, Stephanie Dernan. I was hoping Stephanie could have been on today with us, but she's heading to Enterprise for a meeting, so I couldn't get her to come in and talk. And it actually is at the same time as our meeting, as our show, so I couldn't get her. But the point of this is that if you remember, 2 years ago, HB 31 was essentially the Health Freedom Act that did not get passed, okay? This is a rewrite of it, and it's going to be sponsored by a new House member, Ernie Yarborough, from up in the Decatur area, okay? Essentially what this does is it protects your right to say no to getting any future vaccinations, okay? And it's essential. The fact of the matter is, we should not have to have, well, let's put it this way. Let's have a quick discussion about the efficacy of the vaccines. Do they work? Hell no. And yet we're being forced to get them. You have to have a passport to get into places, some of these places. California, if it doesn't work, how can they force us to get it? Okay? Well, you can say, well, national interests. We need something that's going to stop the spread of this pandemic. I mean, the virus. Okay, I could maybe make a case for that, but it doesn't work. Okay? And it has harmful effects. So I think what Health Freedom is doing is extremely important. And so what we're going to do is have Stephanie talk about that on Thursday. So if you're free, you can go up to, you know, see the Common Sense campaign, call me or call Miss Kay Day, and we're going to have a van. And if we need two vans, we'll get two vans. I already have a donor taking care of that. So we can take people up there and listen. And I think that when you hear some of what the speakers are talking about, Stephanie is one about health freedom and making sure that act is known. We've got Angela Shepherd talking about election integrity. Okay, we've got Dr. John Killian talking about how Common Core is undermining our children's Christian faith. These are the important parts of things that are going to happen. And, you know, again, there's a prayer rally that starts at 11:30 on the State House steps. That's 11 South Union Street, okay? Starts at 11:30, and our Welcome Back rally begins at noon until 1 o'clock.
Okay, and they can go to commonsensecampaign.org?
Go to the commonsensecampaign.org and find it.
Okay.
I'll send you a flyer that you can post on yours, too, if you can.
Commonsensecampaign.org.
Commonsensecampaign.org.
Also can find that on Facebook.
Yes, and okay. On Facebook, too. So here we are. It's now, my goodness, the magic hour.
Yes,
it's 11
it
o'clock, and she's going to cut me off. All right, folks, look, we've covered a lot today. Really appreciate your listening, and if you have comments, send them to Lori over Facebook. Let her know what you like, what you don't like.
You can email us, wabf1480@outlook.com.
There you go. All right. I'm signing off now. Lori, have a great week. You all take care. See you later. See you in Montgomery.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou, brought to you by an anonymous sponsor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed this program, part of it, or would like to tell a friend, it will be posted soon at WABF1480.com. This is WABF Mobile Fairhope, now resuming regular programming.